This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. And I'm here with Pete at Weedy Dealer on Twitter. Pete's back. He's not in 100% good health. I tried to get him to relax and chill out, but he was too keen to get back onto the horse or the boat, whichever way you are in the world, to get back onto the podcast and to be with you, ladies and gents across the world, just to bring you up to speed with his health and what he's been seeing in the markets whilst he's been lying on his sofa for the past week. So hello and welcome to the podcast. And here is Weedy Dealer back with you all.
Hello, mate. Hello, everyone. Yeah, it's been weird. I mean, I was making a cup of tea before we started recording this, and it suddenly struck me that it's been a month since I was on the podcast, because Henry, thank you, Henry, you did a brilliant job. Henry had to stand in for me in the last one because we had a last minute change of plan. And yeah, he did a good job. So, but it's incredible, but it's been like a month and I'm just like, wow, the time has just gone crazy.
Mate, I spoke to you. I was like, don't worry about it. We can do another one. You can just chill out and relax. You'd be like, no, I'm coming back.
Oh, mate.
I was wondering whether all the feedback you saw regarding how well Henry did, you're like thinking, maybe you need to go back before I'm ready now. You know what I mean? Mate, now you wonder why these football players come back half injured, you know?
It's Lewis Hamilton when George Russell comes back for a race and nearly wins. It's like, well, I've got to get back quick before my drive's taken, you know.
Absolutely. Tell us actually how you actually are, Pete, very, very briefly, mate. Come on.
You know, if you'd have asked me that question yesterday, I'd have been a complete manic depressive. Today, I'm a bit more positive. I mean, it's we're recording it, mate, Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. There you go. May the 4th today, Wednesday. It's sort of 6 o'clock we're recording this. It's literally 2 weeks ago, pretty much, well, tomorrow night. 2 weeks ago, I had the operation, and that, you know, turned out to be quite a stressful experience because, you know, I woke up in the middle of it, which I wouldn't recommend to anyone. Obviously, I was hoping that after a year and a half of pain and spending $5,000, I sort of thought, well, they get these stones out and I'll be good, you know. And what seemed to happen was that I was in a lot of pain first few days, and then it started to ease off. And we got to, like, you know, last Thursday, and I was pretty positive and thinking, oh, this is looking really good. But then Friday was just absolutely shocking. I was in so much pain on Friday. I've no idea why. Saturday, it got a little bit better. Sunday, a little bit better, you know, but it's just very up and down. Today, I am feeling a lot better. And, you know, that's, I really hope I'm on the path forward now, but it's been tough. And it's like, you know, I was in all this pain before, and I feel like I've gone through hell and back, and I've got worse pain than what I had before. And you think, oh my God, this is crazy. But, you know, I fingers crossed, I think it's moving in the right direction.
Cool. The body's repairing itself, Pete, and it will take a little bit of time, mate. And you will have to be patient, unfortunately.
But I think I underestimated the time it would take. I think I was literally thinking the bladder stones come out, 2-3 days, I'll be right as rain. Yeah. And it was a forlorn hope, and it hasn't.
Are viewers over the next couple of weeks going to see you go from your red jumper to your mustard jumper to your green jumper, your back fully? Is it a coded message, this subliminous message we're getting, or what?
we're emergency jumpers, mate, you know? I mean, one of
Mustard's good, mate.
Yeah, one of the things is I just feel cold all the time. And it's like I have done through all this, you know, and I'm, you know, you're sat there in your polo shirt.
In a T-shirt, mate.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, we're in May and I've got like, you know, got like a T-shirt, I got a shirt. It's madness. But anyway, yeah. So, yeah, so been quite a while since I was last on the call. And markets haven't really done much in the 2 weeks I've been away. I mean, the American market seems to have got weaker than it was. And I don't think the American market, the NASDAQ particularly, I think looks pretty ugly. UK and US markets, even though the small caps again have been sort of drifting, it hasn't been like a major sell-off or anything. And there's plenty of reasons to feel negative about markets. And I don't feel there's much buying going. I feel there's very little buying pressure, but equally the selling pressure isn't really taking it over. So it's just a really sort of soggy market. Well, how do you feel about it all?
I think we're just sitting here waiting for the Fed rates probably going to be announced shortly. And then tomorrow we've got our Bank of England rates being announced regarding interest rates. And depending on how fast they push them up, if they go, you know, half a point each, then the market might go, you know, we see all the different costs going up left, right and center. Everything's going up and wages aren't going up as quickly to follow them. So we're going to have that sort of squeeze where people are going to rein in some of their spending, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So the discretionary spending that we've been seeing last year and the year before last, latter part of 2020, people were buying this, that and the other. I suspect we're going to see some of that curtail. And we've seen that today already regarding last week and this week regarding some of the profit warnings coming from retail stocks. So I suspect we're going to see some pressure on the markets. The only thing going up in a sense of the markets in the US and the UK consistently in any form, not the only one, but main ones have been energy related plays. As we know, oil and gas has been going up. So everything else, mate, retailers, etc., have been getting hit. And other than the occasional stocks, you know, with an offer of a takeover, most things have been drifting down. And I said to you before, many, many moons ago and repeated on here, I've been watching the trapdoor on the Dow at 33,000 and it keeps ebbing and flowing just on that little level.
Yeah.
And on the S&P, you're probably looking at 4,000 on the S&P. So I'm just watching that and I've been trimming and trimming. And if that trapdoor goes and doesn't recover on 33, I'll sell some more stocks, Pete. And if it goes on the S&P at 4,000, I'll probably look to get out even further on that, on the stocks that I hold. So that's where my thinking is. And it's a bit concerning, really, because I think people have had a difficult time at least a year now.
It's been a hard year.
Yeah, and the FTSE's there or thereabouts at 7,500, if not, and it's getting lower. If we do lose a couple of percentage and we ended up at 7.2, then 7,000 is inevitable. And if that goes, there will be a capitulation, I think, for some people regarding their portfolios.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the Dow now. One of the things that fascinates me about the Dow is if you look at a year chart, it's really been sideways for a year. You know, now either that means, you know, it's not necessarily going to drop much particularly, or maybe it's some sort of topping pattern. As you say, 33,000, really important level. But if it does, if 33,000 does go, it looks to me like 30,000, which is 10% below that, isn't it? Looks quite good support. The one in the US that really freaks me out is the NASDAQ. I think the NASDAQ looks shockingly bad. And I've said this on Twitter a lot, and I'm sure I've mentioned it on the podcast. And it's just a cracking head and shoulders bearish pattern. And in essence, if sort of 12,000 Well, probably a bit less, probably about 12,300, I think it is. If that goes, then I think it's going to, you know, it's going to go to 12,000. I think the really strong support is 10,000. So you could see quite a drop from 12,000 to 10,000 before you really get a solid chunk of support. There's a bit around 11,000, but I just think it looks awful. And if the NASDAQ goes, it'll take the S&P 500 with it. Now, the Dow will probably fall as well, but perhaps not as much. The real question is how much does that contagion effect drip over to Europe? Because one of the things that's really surprised me in the last few weeks is that the American markets have been pretty soggy in the last couple of weeks. But if you look at the DAX, so the German, you know, the German DAX and the CAC 40, which is the French one, and the UK market, they've actually sort of been pretty flat, really. They've held up much better. And I wonder if, I mean, that'd be very unusual to get the Americans falling, but we don't. That would be really unprecedented. It's very rare.
Don't see it happening, Pete.
No.
Don't see it happening.
But you've got this situation where the NASDAQ got really overvalued, as we know. And we were talking about that on this podcast, you know, 6 months ago, whatever. We were saying this is getting silly. And I think in Europe, we're talking about much more old economy, old fashioned stocks. And they've already been hit pretty hard anyway. So we don't have these extreme valuations in Europe that they've got in America. And of course, the FTSE 100 is helped by, you know, the boring old economy dividend payers, and it's helped by the oil and gas and the mining and all that kind of, and banks. Banks tend to benefit when interest rates are rising. So, you know, that's helping the FTSE 100 as well. So I think it's quite an interesting situation, but overall, I'm not bullish at all on the markets. And if anything, I'm just standing aside and letting it play out. You know, I'm not particularly doing anything. What's your stance at the moment?
At the moment, mate, as I said, I'm just taking stuff off the table. Each time it drifts and each time it goes up, I'm taking stuff off the table. I do see, unfortunately, the markets capitulating. You are spot on regarding the valuations of our indices and our holdings are not as rich, they weren't as richly valued as some of the American markets were. And you see the likes of Facebook and Amazon, which were absolutely up there regarding whatever PEs they were on, and Tesla. And some of them are drifting at the moment. So they're going to take the tech heavy loaded indices down. And we don't have those behemoth tech stocks in the UK at all. Yeah. And not many of them are in European indices either. So once they start to roll over, they're taking their US indices with them. We don't have them in Europe. So we might get away with not getting, you know, absolutely hammered when those techs roll over. But we will invariably go down with the American markets when they go down, Pete. Maybe not as much.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm in agreement with you. But stepping aside, I've been stepping aside since October, November. I'll continue to take some more off the table, and I'll cut and cut and cut until I have to declare that position is now done. So I'm not overly optimistic. We have this sell in May and go away sort of scenario every single year. I think, unfortunately, the next 3 months, including and the summer months as well, could be quite difficult for us as investors. And if we get a bit of a rise and things find some foundations in September, October time, great. But I think we're going to be in for some difficult months because interest rates are going up. And with that, mortgages go up, you know, people's rents go up, the level of spending goes down, people will decide, actually, we're not going to buy that house, we're not going to move, we're going to stay where we are. So there's less spending being spent. So we're going to have some, I think we're going to have some difficult months, Pete. That's my concern.
Oh, I totally agree.
I think the thing I would say is that the cash rich American entities and overseas entities will still be plundering. They will still be coming here to advance and to buy our undervalued entities. So there will be opportunities for people to have a look and need to have a good look around to see what's available for them.
Do we, just as a general rule, I've never really looked into this or even thought about it. Do we tend to see less takeovers during the summer months? I wonder if that is the case.
I don't know if I've seen any research on that. I think as an aggregate across the whole year, we tend to see quite a number of takeovers across the year. And it's usually UK companies being taken by American, if not overseas.
Yeah,
it's just consistent, regardless of the season, Pete. There will be plunders because they've got deep pockets and the hedge funds have got money sitting there doing nothing. And they're not going to buy stuff in the US if they have to, because they're buying stuff that's already richly valued. They want to buy stuff here that they can actually make a big chunk of margin on. They're not going to make the same sort of margins on buying stuff that's already in the US.
I guess though, what I have noticed over the years with takeovers and stuff is that institutional or corporate buyers are just as bad as us investors, you know, in terms of getting our time and stuff. And it's the classic thing where when times are tough and no one's interested in the market, they don't tend to do deals. When everyone's gangbusters and everything's going up and it's all hip, hip, hooray, we're all brilliant, then they do the deals, which you think about, it's completely stupid. You know, it's certainly not what Warren Buffett would be doing. You know, he'd be the other way around. So I always find that quite intriguing. Something I picked up before this call, again, I did something that I don't very often do, because I'm just sick of watching like Sky News and the BBC going on and on about Ukraine and all the rest of it. And just think, God, it's such a horrendous situation. It's just so depressing, isn't it? And I can't watch any more of this because I'm not learning anything. I'm just hearing the same old stuff regurgitated hour after hour. And I put CNBC on, and some guy on there made a really interesting point. I felt for a while, and I might have mentioned it on a previous podcast, that the world of private equity is massively overvalued. And he was making the point that valuations that are being done on the private markets, so that's where private equity and whatever is buying companies that aren't listed. And, you know, a lot of them are startup companies, tech companies, blah, blah, blah. He says valuations there are crazily stretched. And he says that there has never been a sort of market sell-off where, you know, with interest rates going up, with potential for recession, blah, blah, blah. There has never been one where private valuations have remained high. They always get pulled down, which makes sense. It's illogical that they would be high.
Yeah, I mean, and you've got to throw into the equation that as interest rates go up, the cost of borrowing will go up. So a lot of these purchases are leveraged. You've got a situation now where Elon Musk is buying, Twitter. He's raised, he's sold X amount of Tesla stocks, which some people say, maybe is he really going to be buying Twitter? Maybe this is just an excuse to sell some Tesla stock. So he's sold something like £8 billion worth of Tesla stock, maybe plus or minus a bit, but he's got the rest of it to find. So where is he going to find that? And who's going to support him? And
where's he going I understood there's some sort of funny arrangement with it, where it's like a contingent deal, where it's almost like shares in Tesla that Elon Musk owns are being used as collateral against loans that he's been advanced and whatever. I mean, it all sounds such a mess.
There's loads of different scenarios I've read, mate. I'm not sure what the truth is of the matter, but he's already talking like he's already owns the company and he's making changes. And politicians and various other entities might have to start paying, but it'd be all right for you, private investors or private, you know, private little people and so on and so forth. He doesn't own it yet. So it's going to be very, very interesting going forward as to what he does. And we were talking about it when Henry was on. And yeah, it's going to be a whole different ball of wax when he actually owns the company. And whilst we're just talking here again, I need to go back and give a shout to Henry at HT Viola. He was absolutely phenomenal, Pete. He came on. He had like half an hour's notice, you know, just enough to just dab his face and slap himself and wake himself
up. We totally stitched him up.
Yeah, and he came on the show and he did an absolutely phenomenal job. The feedback's been brilliant. We will get him back on here with you again at some point so you can have a chance to speak to him. He enjoyed it. I've spoke to him again since we've recorded it.
Excellent.
And it's good to see other people have embraced him as well, because he's had a few people follow him on Twitter as well. And he's had nothing but praise, because he came on and just did the business. And I think the beauty of it was as well, what he was trying to convey was the fact that actually he's got quite a different take. He likes his value stocks, but he is quite, you know, picky. Well, I think that's the way you should be. You should be very selective regarding what you buy and what you don't buy. So, yeah, it's very, very interesting how he conducted himself. And I thought it was really, really good interview / podcast / co-hosting it. So, yeah, that was really good.
No, did great. Something else that I picked up probably on CNBC the other night or something, one of the people on there was saying how if you look at the bond markets, right, they are predicting or pricing in, the bond market is pricing in rate rises through this year. There was talk today of the US interest rates getting as high as sort of 3%, which, you know, I mean, compared to where we were 20, 30 years ago, is still a low rate. Mm-hmm. But compared to where we were 2, 5, 10 years ago, it's an incredibly high rate. So it's all relative. But they were talking about going to 3%. But what was really interesting is they said that if you look out on the bond curve sort of 4 or 5 years, it's actually predicting those rates to go down again, which is sort of suggests it, what that's really telling us. Oh my God, come back. Don't go.
No, he's back.
Sorry.
No, I'm just nearly putting the light on, mate, for all those that thought I just walked off stage in the middle of this podcast.
I thought I was boring you senseless.
No, mate.
Run away.
Not yet.
Oh, man. You were like, I go to find Henry. I've had enough of this standing. I want my Henry back. Where was I? I lost my train. Yeah.
See, I've lost you there.
So it was like, basically, the bond market is predicting that the Fed and the central banks get it wrong, and they raise rates too much, they overshoot, they cause recession. That's incredible. We talked about it before. It's like, I mean, I don't know if we'll go into recession, but there's a lot of signals that we might. What I do think will happen, I think we're going to have stagflation. I think we'll be in and out of recession. You know, we'll be on the verge, we'll be almost like a recession, but we'll be growing like 0.5% a year. It'll be absolutely pathetic, stagnant growth. That's what I think we'll see for some time.
We're going to see difficult markets and difficult times, Pete. I keep banging on about it. You know, I'm working with these different charities, you know, homeless charities, food banks and all the rest of it. And the situation is, we've not even kicked, it's almost like before the whistles, before the referees actually started the game, or Formula One, before the flag goes down to start the race. And there's already massive, massive issues behind the scenes, you know, where you are in Windsor, there's problems. Where I am in Leicestershire, there's problems. Up and down the country, there's problems. And this is before all of the stuff kicks off and more people lose their jobs and the big bills start kicking in. So I suspect, you know, the corporates out there as well are going to feel the heat, Pete. They're going to feel more and more difficulties going forward. And that's going to, you know, impact the markets, because we're going to see more and more companies going, actually, we were earmarked to earn this much, and actually we've only done this much.
Yeah.
And you're going, crikey, that's in a year. How can they lose that much money in a year? They've had to reinvest into that and do this and that and the other. Costs have gone up. You know,
Well, we're
going to have a difficult time.
We've talked about it before, about profit warnings. I mean, I've mentioned it on Twitter today. You know, we are already seeing more and more profit warnings come through. I mean, today we probably had 3 or 4. And I think that is where we are going forwards. And it's almost getting to the point, you wake up every morning, you look to see what of your companies is reporting, and it's like, good Lord, I hope there isn't a profit warning from it. And it's, I mean, for me personally, I've not done too bad on it so far. I got hit with boo today, down 12%. I'm not shocked by boo. And I don't think there was anything in the boo news today that was particularly new. I think we're in that thing where boo has been falling like a stone for ages. It's going to get into the sideways rehab stage soon. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. Whether it goes a bit lower, I'm not sure. I think 63p is a key level. 50p after that is a really key level. I think at some point we will start to see it level out, but it'll probably just grind sideways for ages. That's what these things tend to do. I put a video on TikTok about going into rehab, which people can look up. Mate, I wanted to ask you a question, right?
Before you ask me the question, Pete.
Go on.
We recorded July 2020. Boo. We had the Q&A for Mello live, and I raised all my concerns regarding Boohoo. Yeah. And I said to everybody, stay well away from that. It's got lots and lots of issues. And it's around 270-ish, 276, something like that. Because of all of the stuff about the sweatshops and all the rest of it and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I called it wrong, right? The share went from 270-odd to £4.15, right? In the latter part of 2020, right? It's today, it went to 65.5p.
Oh, been murdered. Right? Yeah.
So if someone's held that all that way, there's not many people left who've had it, you know, back in 2020 or earlier that are currently in profit. What I've done today, because I'm thinking to myself, actually, now the actual market is saying, this is done now, right? This is like, you know, it's capitulated. I've had a nibble today for the first time of Boohoo.
Wow. Right?
Why? I mean, this is why I'm interrupting you. Why? It's because we're looking at the fact that every single thing on that I read this morning was negative. Some of the stats were just absolutely appalling for Boo this morning. And I was like, okay, how much worse can it get? It's at 70 pence. Of course it could halve. The share price could halve to 35 pence on the next warning or whatever. But what I suspect, and I could be proven wrong here, and this is no recommendation or advice to anybody else to go and buy this particular stock, right, is that the company will either be taken private, or they'll be looking to actually prop themselves up with somebody else, because those people within the company took a big chunk of change out ages ago at much, much, much higher prices. So if they wanted to leverage it out, they could get with whomever and take it out for £1, £1.50, whatever they want. However, if you're brave enough and you were to consider buying Boo at 70 pence, 50 pence, or whatever, where it goes from here, given the fact we've already said we think the markets are going to go lower, Boo's not going to stand there like that going, I'm at 70p when the market's going to act. It's going to go lower as well. But if you're brave enough, at some point or other, this stock in 2 or 3 years' time, if it's still listed, will not be at 70 pence. If it goes back to profitability and people go back out and they're shopping and they're traveling and buying all the clothes and doing what they want to do, this stock will go higher. That's why I've had a little nibble of it today. I haven't really been buying a lot of late, but I took a nibble at Boo today because I thought, right, let me just start building a position now and let's see what happens. Wake me up again when it's at 35p and 50p and I'll be like, what were you thinking, you madman? But you know, I tend not to be buying at 52-week highs and 5-year highs and all the rest of it. I tend to buy when things are at what I think is low, but often they go lower. So it's no tip, no recommendation. I'm just being open here as to why I've done that. I don't want people to say, well, Pete mentioned Boo on that day and Conkers didn't say anything about it. I'm just telling you now, I've had a nibble today.
Well, again, you're doing the sensible thing. You're buying in stages. You know, you bought a little nibble now. You're in the game. Whatever happens from here, if it goes down, it's not going to impact your overall portfolio that much. But if it goes down from here, you'll get another opportunity to buy another nibble, whatever. You know, as I say, I expect it will go into rehab at some point. Yes, as you point out, the markets have a general tank. It'll probably get hit as well because, but that's interesting. Mate, question.
The thing is, Pete, one second. I'm talking about another completely unrelated stock now, right? Which is in a completely different field, right? We're talking about stocks getting hit. So I've got DLG, Direct Line.
Yeah.
Right. It's more like, well, I've had it for a little while now, and I'm thinking, well, that's a solid stock. You know, it's got all these issues going on about, you know, insurance firms and what they should be doing, and they've got to look after everybody and not just treat new customers differently to the old ones. And I'm thinking, well, you know what? It's drifted a little bit, and today came out with the trading update. The trading update was mixed to poor, I would say, and it's doing a buyback anyway. And it drifted. I don't know where it closed. It was down earlier on today at 6%, and I was like,
yeah,
wow,
down
an insurance firm getting hit by 6%. I was like, that's a bit heavy, but it shows you what's going on regarding the markets, that if you don't come out and say, actually, you're doing all right, you will be punished. Doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a blue chip company or a small, you know, online company or an oil or mining company, you're going to get absolutely spanked. So just tread carefully out there, folks.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
You know,
from a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, the low on DLG looks like around 225, I think. And I'll check that again. Yeah, around £2.25. Today, it was 239 it closed at. So if that 225 goes, then yeah, it probably, you know, could go lower.
I didn't add today. I'm waiting to see what the market does tonight after the Fed announces what it announces, and also tomorrow when the Bank of England potentially announces what it announces, if it's tomorrow or Friday. I'm losing track of all these different interest rates.
Oh, it's today, isn't it? Yes, yeah, today.
The Americans today. Yeah. Bank of England tomorrow, if not Friday, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm waiting to see that, and I'll keep tracking DLG. I won't be selling my DLG, I don't think. I'm going to keep a couple of core stocks irrespective of what the market does.
Yeah. Mate, before I ask you the question, because the question is very much a stock-related question and a sector-related question, and we've got plenty of stocks to talk about, I just want to mention the charity we're supporting this year, which is the Backup Trust. And, you know, I've had loads of donations from people, which is absolutely fantastic. And if you want to contribute yourselves, then, I'll give you the link. It might help. The link is justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeaks. That takes you to the Twin Peaks Challenge 2022. At the moment, we've got £1,409, so it's climbing up. We'll be running this for the whole of 2022. Backup is a charity that is quite dear to my heart because I'm a paraplegic wheelchair user, and Backup is very much about helping people with spinal injuries, so people who've broken their neck or broken their backs like me, and use wheelchairs and whatever. Actually, there are people who don't use wheelchairs who've had spinal injuries. So quite often you see people, I was going to say a funny walk, but that's not very PC, so I won't say funny walk. But, you know, people who have obviously got some sort of physical disability and not using
hidden,
a wheelchair.
Hidden disabilities is what you're looking
for. No, this is what you can see, man. It's like really obvious, yeah?
But
the point is, quite often people have damage to their spinal cord, and it only impinges and damages a little bit of the spinal cord. And as a result, they can sort of walk and stuff, but whatever. But one of the weird, I've got to tell you about this because it always struck me as weird. With me, right, my spinal cord, because I had a motorbike accident in 1998. Imagine that's my vertebrae. So if you're watching this on YouTube, there you go. Great demonstration of vertebrae. That's your thoracic third, that's your fourth. If you're listening on the podcast, then, well, what can I do? Right, I'm holding my fists up. All right. Anyway, so basically in my accident, my bones went like that, and my cord, which runs through the middle, got completely smashed to bits. Now, there's a really weird condition people can get where instead of like cutting the cord straight across, whatever, it's like the outside of the cord gets damaged, but the inside, sort of in a, like a circular thing, the circle of the outside gets damaged, but the inside doesn't, something like that. And what it means is that you can have someone who looks absolutely perfect in terms of their mobility and their physical presence and whatever, but they don't have control of their bladder and bowels, which is the weirdest one, isn't it? And there was, when I was in hospital in 1998, it's a really sad situation where there was a, I think she was quite young, she was like 17-year-old girl from Egypt, right? Which, you know, in a UK hospital was quite unusual in itself, but Stoke Mandeville is probably, you know, the premier spinal injury hospital in the world, or Stanmore is a good one as well. I believe there's one in Salisbury that's pretty good. But these were obviously from a very well-to-do Egyptian family. I mean, her mum used to come in and she was just dripping in jewellery and all the leather trousers and whatever. And, you know, all the all us men on the wall were like, you know, fixated. Anyway, so that's another story. So, but this poor girl, she's like 17, whatever, and she had this unusual condition. So even though she looked absolutely perfect, she had no control over bladder and bowels, which is, you know, probably one of the worst aspects of having a spinal injury. But anyway, there you go. Right, that's enough. I must stop talking about bladders and bowels.
I'm just, I was waiting for a connection as to what you were telling me that because of the charity. But here we go. Sorry, folks.
I don't know how I got onto that.
What can I say? Dear.
Okay. How did I get onto that? Anyway. So anyway, I just wanted to say, looking on the people who've donated, we've got our mate Scrumpy, good man, Scrumpy 2222, TPI 73, so that's one with Henry. Fascinating interview and topics discussed. Well done, Henry, Peter. Peter, shame you couldn't make it, but I hope things go well and hear you again soon. Thanks, mate, appreciate that. Kips, that's Brian. We know Brian Kips, he's give 100 quid, brilliant. What's going on with my computer? Oh, here we are. Right. I make Mark Bentley, Marbon 100. Great work, Pete and Pete. When you have a spare moment, when he has a spare moment, enjoy listening to your banter on the podcast. Some great messages in there for newer investors to avoid some of the pitfalls. Well, that's why we do it, mate, isn't it? To help everyone out. Jeffrey Allen. Oh, we know Jeff. Yeah, Gallon 73. Yeah, good guy. Enjoy the Twin Peaks podcast for a while. I don't know. Even better on the TV. Backup sounds like a good cause too. Well, absolutely, mate. Jeff, it totally is a good cause. Nigel Donati, keep up the banter and down-to-earth and digestible podcast chaps. Many thanks to both of you. Brilliant stuff. Yeah, thanks, Nigel. Super.
That's also up to date, Pete. Yeah, with that one.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah. Anyway, mate, I wanted to talk to you about... Anyway, so if people can help, you know, donate to charity, it'd be much appreciated. Obviously, with the tough times and that, you know, backup charity could really do with your help. So, you know, if you can only give a fiver, just give a fiver. It doesn't matter, you know, just whatever you can. Thank you.
Yeah. Right. You make a good point there, Pete, that charities and the voluntary sector are really struggling right now. You know, every single one I'm involved in are struggling right now, you know. I put stuff out on Twitter just recently, and if anyone knows or lives near a food bank, if they could do anything to just take around some tins and cereal and bits and pieces that's not perishable near where they live, that those food banks will be very, very pleased to see you and to support people in the community that are struggling now with food poverty. So, yeah.
Well, it's bound to happen, isn't it? It's like when there's tough economic times, every family is going to be looking at their spending and saying, right, what can we cut out? And it's like, well, you know, every month we're giving such and such to charities, we've got to cut that down. And that's what people are doing. And it's one of the things that I picked up on, I think it was in Chris Dillo's column in Investors Chronicle, always worth reading, love it. It can be a bit complicated at times. I think a lot of people struggle with that. But once you sort of get in the swing of it, it's always really insightful. And I think they said something there where what tends to happen is once consumers start feeling the pinch, they react very fast. There is no delay to cutting your spending. You know, people, as soon as people were hearing about their gas bills doubling and electricity going through the roof and food prices shooting up, people were straight away, boom, reining in the spending. And I think that's absolutely what happened. And that's what we're seeing in the profit warnings and things that are coming through. Another one, and I wasn't going to mention this stock, but I'll throw it in quickly because it's relevant. Luce, L-U-C-E, Luceco. I didn't read the update, so I'm talking here with limited knowledge. But what I did pick up was that one of the things they're suffering from, and this was reiterated on a discussion on CNBC today, that they're suffering from channel stuffing. Now, that's a situation where their customers, so Luce's customers, and this is happening with lots of other businesses as well, because of the supply chain difficulties, were ordering more stock than they actually needed. Their customers were. So their customers were buying in loads of stock. So Luceco, Luce, got the impression there was loads of demand for its stuff. Actually, it was false demand. It was creating a buffer of stock so that their customers could work through what they had to do with the stuff they buy from Luceco. And that demand has now fallen away because they got all the stock they need. So we got to watch for channel stuffing. That's happening all over the place.
And I suspect, again, you know, we're going to see much more of those references being made, Pete, because we had the bit where, you know, we had the I forget what this what that ship was called blocking the Suez Canal, you know, so people started
Everard
panicking.
Or something. Ever shed?
I forgot the Evergreen.
Ever ready.
So the problem you've got now is going to be exacerbated with some stocks just be having difficulties going forward. And I think what I would say to the ladies and gents that are listening to the program that we're on now on this podcast is when you see a stock, Luceco or any other stock, referencing difficulties or profit warning, have a look at your portfolio. Have a look at the stocks that are in your portfolio and think, is there any reference in this profit warning for that stock that could actually impact my holding in this stock in my portfolio? Because if you have a stock and you're sitting there thinking, actually, mine's fine today, mine's fine tomorrow, just have a look and see if there's any read across regarding the markets that they're in. Are they supplying overseas? Could their suppliers and their purchase of goods be channel stuffing as well? Have a think about it. You know, you don't want to wake up next week with your stock being down 25% or 20% or 30%. So yeah, have a good think about it.
No, that's
so.
That's,
what else you got, Pete?
Yeah, right. I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that much exposure to oil and gas and mining resources. Yeah. I've probably got, say, I don't know, maybe say 10% of my portfolio in those sectors, that kind of scale, yeah? And I was sort of toying with the idea that maybe I should increase my exposure to resources. I hold Glencore, not a massive position. I've got a bit of Glencore. And I think I've talked about it before on the podcast and sort of said, well, you know, there's aspects I like the fact that it's in sort of modern, you know, forthcoming sort of EV type metals. But I don't like the fact that it's got a terrible record on corruption and all that kind of stuff, which just stinks. Before the lawyers get us, I didn't say that, all right? Anyway, so what I was wondering was what I could do is get more exposure to Glencore. But the other thing that struck me was, and this was after an Investor's Chronicle, they were one of their best ideas, was Anglo-American, AAL. And I quite was attracted by the idea of AAL, because I think at the moment, to be honest, all the miners, the big diversified miners are all moving the same way. So it almost doesn't matter which one you buy, but you know, some are sort of going to be better than others. But I was thinking about AAL. And I guess my question is, apart from what are your sort of thoughts about that in general, my real question is, how much upside is there really left in, perhaps not so much oil, but we can discuss oil as well, but how much upside is there likely to be in metals? And I'm talking your coppers, your zincs, your nickels, your all the usual stuff, even the lithiums and whatever. How much upside is there really? Or are we now towards the top of the cycle and the booming commodities has happened? It's a really difficult call. What's your thoughts?
I don't think we're at the end of the boom, Pete. I think if you look at the countries, America probably being one of the most, China, the UK, infrastructure-wise, and the electrification of everything that's going forward, and the transition to new energies, we're going to need all of the minerals, all the metals, all of the commodities, rare earths as well, going forward. So the actual demand is still going to be there going forward, irrespective of recessions. We've got Boris coming out just recently saying we're going to go nuclear. You know, we're going to have to go down the route of building some nuclear for energy purposes going forward. So there's loads we need. There's loads of stuff that we need in the UK and across Europe to build back going forward and to improve going forward. Networks that are needed, infrastructure that's being spent. All of that's going to need copper. All that's going to need iron. All of that's going to need X, Y, and Z. We've already talked about the car side of it in the past and what metals are going to be needed for that and what commodities are going to be needed for that. We can't get the stuff out of the ground quick enough, Pete, to build what we need going forward. And the way that we're building things are changing. We need to make things more lightweight going forward. So we need different metals and different processes in place. I think the concern I have regarding all of it is the refining side of it, all of these metals, because a lot of the metals get refined elsewhere from where they're actually mined.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's being done in China. And the problem we've got with that is that, you know, you've got a situation where they're hoarding stuff or they're keeping stuff. And then when we need some of it, we can't get what we want, you know. So the supply chain is there. The vast majority of metals, there will be a deficit for them regarding the demands needed going forward. Is it the right time to buy the individual stocks? I don't know the answer to that.
Who knows?
Will the prices be higher for Glencore, AAL, BHP, Rio in the next 5 years? I would say there's a fair good chance that there will be. And the vast majority of the larger mining stocks that we're talking about now, the behemoths, they can offset a lot of their costs in a sense of if the price of copper goes up, the person that needs to buy the copper off them gets the bill. You know, they're not going to say, oh, we're going to sell it to you for whatever you can take. They're in control of those sort of markets. So we're going to need them to keep on mining. They're going to keep on mining. The price will always fluctuate for commodities. It's just the way that it is. But is the boom over regarding picking a selected stock? I don't think so. You've got the dividend. Most of them are going to pay a dividend as well, Pete. So I go back to what I always say with these sort of stocks. If you're going to hold them for 3 years, 5 years, 15 years, you're going to get a total return on it. You need 7%, right? And over the course of time, you double your money. Yeah, that's all you need. So if you've got the average mining stocks yielding 3.5%, you need a 4% return and that's it. Yeah. And then every 10 years, you've doubled whatever that investment was. The problem we've got, obviously, is that vast majority of people, you know, including most of our listeners, don't hold a stock for 10 years. You know, they hold it for a very, very short space of time. And, you know, I keep mentioning the supercomputer that we've got in our little pockets called the mobile phone. You know, they're in and out of it. Whilst I'm on this call, I'll tell you about the conversation I just had with Mark Dampier. So I had an interview with Mark Dampier on Investing Matters. Brilliant interview. Very lovely chap. Spoke about the difficulties regarding the Woodford situation, time at Argyll's Lansdown. So anybody that had anything to do or wants to hear a little bit about Neil Woodford and the debacle that happened regarding all of that and the funds that he was involved in, please, please, please go and have a little listen to those Investing Matter interviews. The one with Mark is really good and he covers that. So just check out at Invest Matters on Twitter, or just ask your Alexa to play the Investing Matters podcast. So the problem we've got, Pete, is that the situation is going to be one that continues going forward. Difficulties regarding value and people being impatient. If you are going to buy AAL now and you hold it for the next 5, 10, 15 years, I think you will do absolutely fine. Will it be down 30, 40% drawdown in the middle of any of that period? Quite possible. Will it be up 30, 40, 50% over that? Quite possible. Who knows? But if you're going to invest, you're buying for the long term. You're not buying for what happens to the stock in the next three or four, five, 6 months. You know, I'm holding, I've got some Rio. It's gone up. It's come down. I'm holding it from 30-odd quid, 34 quid or so. It's gone up to 63. It's come down again to 50-odd. It's going to go up again. It may go down even lower. I'm going to hold a core of Rio going forward. And when it goes a bit lower, I'll reinvest some more of the dividends that it's stripping off.
Looking on ChairPad now, Anglo-American, AAL, is showing I mean, when I look at a miner, I don't get that excited about PE ratios, because obviously the PE ratio varies so much on what their earnings are. And obviously that varies so much on what the underlying commodity prices are. So, you know, it's just a bit of a nightmare. But what I do tend to look at is the dividend yield. The forecast yield on AAL is 6.5%. The two-year forecast yield is 5.4%. So that tells a story in itself, that the analysts and the forecasters are actually predicting that earnings are likely to fall, hence the reduction in the dividend yield. So that in itself is quite interesting. On Glencore, the dividend figures there are, yeah, I mean, it's mental. It's crazy. Forecast yield, 11.5%. Two-year forecast yield, 11.7%. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, there's some large dividends out there. You have to look at when that was last calculated and at what price, and whether or not the dividend was a special as well, Pete. So be mindful of that. What you should be looking at regarding the miners is their all-in costs, Pete. So all of the costs, stripping out all the costs, what's the margin on that? And depending on the cost, yeah, as the inflation goes up and the cost of employees and the cost of transport and the cost of fuel, all the rest of it, as that goes up, their all-in costs might increase and the margins might drop, and therefore that goes the profitability. Yeah. And sometimes they go, you know what? The actual costings of this mine, it's not financially viable now, so we're going to just push that aside and leave that for the time being. So you've got to keep a track of all the all-in costs. And sometimes you go, there's a little signal there that they're not going to do very well going forward, especially with the smaller ones. But the bigger ones, they can offset some of that cost. But that's incurring. You've got to keep a track on the costs, and that tells you about the profitability going forward. And that's when you get the bumper dividends and the special dividends, when they're doing extremely well.
I think it's interesting because the situation for big miners has changed, because it used to be the case that they would willy-nilly just continually invest profits and buy more mines, buy more exploration stuff, blah, 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 blah. And they got themselves in so much trouble for doing that. And what has happened since is they've become much more interested in sweating the mines they already have and paying big dividends to shareholders. And that's what shareholders have been demanding. But of course, the problem is that means that fewer mines are coming through, which adds to the supply problems. So, you know, it's a total mess. The other thing that intrigues me, you talked there about, when we talked about commodity prices, you talked about a lot about supply. I think the demand side is really interesting, because I think the assumption, and it seems a fair one, is that with the world going to net zero, you know, there's going to be more need for copper, for zinc, for lithium, for blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a fair assumption. I think there's some real problems with that. I think on the demand side, if we do go into recession, we saw it back back 2-3 years ago, yeah, remember when COVID hit, yeah? When we saw oil prices go negative. So they were actually paying you to take oil away. I mean, you know, when you look at where oil is today, it's just bonkers. Mm. And the point is that when demand drops, and the thing is, when you talk about things like, well, the best one's the car industry, right? You look at the car industry, you've got a price of a new car. They have shot up. New car prices have gone up so much, and it's dragging up the second-hand car prices. I mean, my Seat Cupra, I bought that just over 3 years ago. The list price was 32 grand. The equivalent Cupra now is 37 in just 3 years. And it's getting to the point. I mean, you know, I could afford to buy it when it was 32 grand. I'm not sure I could afford to buy it when it's 37. I'm not sure I'd want to buy it at 37. And it gets to the point where prices get so high, and with consumers cash strapped, with interest rates going up. So all these monthly PCP deals, they look good when interest rates are 0.5%. When interest rates are 3, 4%, those PCP deals look very different. So, you know, if we see demand fall off a cliff, which is quite possible,
yeah, absolutely,
then that is going to really hit, you know, the demand side for commodities. My other concern is that we sort of assume that governments are going to put money into building wind farms and blah, blah, blah. Governments don't have the money. You know, where are they going to get the money from? They've already got into trouble for all the quantitative easing, the off-balance sheet stuff, the printing money, all these things they've been doing. They're having to rein everything in. They ain't going to have the money to invest in these things. And they're relying on the private sector to invest in wind farms and whatever. The private sector won't have the money. So I think there's a real demand shock, not necessarily a shock, a demand drop potentially in the offing, which could put pressure on the commodity side. I mean,
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all, Pete.
Okay.
I don't. I foresee that if we do get a situation where we're heading into recession, what do countries do? They start to create jobs. They start to create work. You know, we're going to be building bridges, doing roads, building all kinds of housing and all the rest of it to accommodate people who need social housing and all the rest of it. The American infrastructure is rife with the needs to work and investments. There's bridges falling all over the place. Same in China. They will carry on building. They'll carry on mending and repairing. And that's going to need lots of different commodities. And given what we've seen with regards to what's going on in the Ukraine and elsewhere, where there's other wars going on, which we're not even talking about anymore, there's going to be rebuilding required. I can't agree with you on that point. I think the demand will continue. I think irrespective of where oil prices go and where copper and iron prices go and steel prices go, people will be building, countries will be building and investing in their infrastructure because they need to, because they've left things go so long that they're catching up now. It's too late. So we're now saying we're going to build nuclear plants. It's like, mate, you've been thinking about the energy crisis and the problems we've got with our energy supply 5 years ago, 20 years ago, rather than just going, oh, we'll be all right. We rely on Russia. We rely on blah, 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 blah. We can't do that anymore. You know, you've got to build and you've got to spend. And they claim they haven't got any money, Pete, but when they need to, they'll find the money for it and they'll spend it.
So you look at like the UK budget, you know, Chancellor Rishi Sunak is really struggling to control the budget. We're borrowing ridiculous amounts of money all the time. Our budget has got really in a mess. And the problem is, we want to spend on housing. We want to spend on net zero. We need to spend more on defence. It looks like that's going to go over the 2% NATO commitment, and arguably it needs to. We're going to need to spend more on hospitals. We're going to need to spend more on social care. You know, there's so many demands. And bear in mind, if we go into this kind of depression kind of scenario, very low growth, we're not going to be getting the tax revenues. So I just think UK government particularly, I think, is in a quandary. I think that is certainly the case in America. I mean, America, they've just lost the plot. You look at borrowing America, it's just insane. And I just don't see how all this spending can, you know, there has to be decisions about priorities. And I just can't see any of the politicians.
They're going to raise taxes. Hey, they've already started, mate. They're going to raise taxes, mate. The taxes that you pay indirectly are going to go up. The levies are going to go
up. Which will crush the economy even more.
They're going to have to balance the books a little bit. But the amount that we're in debt as a country, the UK and America, is going to carry on going higher for the time being. I don't know when it's going to start drifting down, but it hasn't for the last 30 years. If I'm wrong, somebody will correct me, I'm sure. But yeah, they're going to carry on spending them.
It's an interesting situation.
Let's talk some stocks, Pete. Get some stocks done.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Well, mate, I want to ask your opinion on another one, right? I have got 14 stocks in my little income portfolio, yeah? And I'm after a 15th at some point. And I was thinking about a green one, and I was thinking of things like Gresham House, you know, Grid. I was thinking about, I actually got one written down here, NESF, which I think is something like Next Energy Solar Fund, which pays a big dividend, according to my notes. And things like Residential Secure Income, RESI. So there were various ones I was sort of thinking about. But another one that sort of crosses my mind, is Tesco. Tesco is paying over 4%, is expected to pay over 4% dividend yield. I like the idea of grocers, because as much as they're going to be under pressure to keep prices down where they can, you know, you look at Tesco's, its history is brilliant, really. Okay, it's been through some bad patches, like in the 70s and 80s, it got pretty ropey. It went through problems, 10 years ago? But, you know, it's come out fighting. It's looking in good shape. It's still the dominant grocery retailer. I don't know, what's your thoughts on it, mate? Do you think it would fit in an income portfolio as a sort of defensive, boring thing?
When you said income portfolio, mate, I didn't think you were going to be mentioning Tesco's in that situation. But the yield is good. It's a solid company, dependable. It's been through the ringer. It's actually done reasonably well over the past couple of years. It's actually fought back really, really well, in a sense of it got itself into some difficulties a few years back. But they seem to be getting their act in order, and they're still beating off the likes of Sainsbury's. Morrison's got, as you know, got taken over, and they seem to be still holding, you know, their position at number one and by some measure as well. Is it secure enough for an income? Yes. Does it pour off loads of cash? Yes. Are they likely to increase it if its profits go up? Yes. What's my bear points on Tesco's? Possibly the fact that they're all the retailers are talking about increasing the salaries of their workers across the board. So those costs will probably go up. If fuel stays high, as it has been for the last umpteen months, logistically delivering all those groceries as people shop online more, that increases. So people aren't traveling to the shop themselves. They're asking Tesco's to deliver it. They can offset that, though, Pete, by asking people to pay X amount for certain deliveries if they're not a certain price, which I'm sure some of them are already doing.
And the thing is, so, all grocery retailers have got the same problem. You know, so it's all about which one is the most efficient, really.
Absolutely.
We don't have a choice. We have to buy food.
Absolutely, and as you say, we've got to eat, and we'll do what we can. And it's sitting there right at the not the bottom, but it's not at the top tier where people are shopping at Waitrose and paying the premium because they want to shop at the Waitrose. You know, it's the one that people shop at the most. And it's the reason why they've got the level of revenue that they've got. And I think there's also, you know, they are still building their smaller little Tesco shops, Pete. You know, they're still building those out. You know, they're the new corner shop almost. You see, you go into most cities now and there's little tiny little Tesco's there. So they're getting the person that's walking in the football, going from back to forth. So, yeah, is it a good option? Of the retailers, which one would I pick that's left? Tesco's would be the one.
And I think, I mean, I used to hold Sainsbury's SBRY in my income portfolio. Mm-hmm. I believe that one pays a bit higher dividend, like 4.8% or something. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's those perennial takeover rumors. Is it Qatari pension fund or something? Sovereign wealth fund, isn't it? That always comes up. I sold it ages ago because I wasn't that impressed by the Argos buy. But in fact, that's actually worked out all right for them. And I think they've managed it very well. But of the two, I would say Tesco's is probably the more sort of solid and more interesting one, even though the dividend yield's a bit lower. But mate, similar link. Did you see the results from Kitwave today? KITW.
I have got Kitwave to talk about. You lead on it, mate. I was going to talk about it as well.
Well, yeah. I was
surprised by that this morning. I was quite impressed. So go for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly recent IPO. What, about a year ago or something?
Mm-hmm.
And it does supplies, delivery to your little corner shops and whatever. Got a bit of debt, but that shouldn't be too much of a problem because, again, being in that sector, it's you know, it's going to have good cash flow and whatever and fairly solid sort of stable demand. From memory, I mean, I can get you the exact figures. It was on a really attractive PE rating and it was paying a pretty good dividend as well. So I thought, I read that this morning, and I think they were slightly ahead of expectations, which is always what you want to see, especially in the current environment. So I thought that was quite an interesting. What do you reckon then?
I've read it myself this morning, Pete, and I had it here just to reference for people to give it a look. I think what happens sometimes is that companies overcomplicate things and they make purchases of other companies and the synergies don't actually come as quickly as they expect. Mm. And I think in their regard, the recent merger and purchase that they've done has sank in really well and the profitability has increased. So that's why they're ahead. I like the look of that this morning. The markets was a bit cautious on it overall today. But I think going forward, when the markets are a little bit more positive in general, I think Kitwave could be one to definitely investigate further in a sense of it's actually doing well. It's saying it's going to be slightly ahead. And during difficult times, if you've got a company saying it's slightly ahead, when things get even better, which may be 3 months, 6 months or a year away from now, if they can still be doing okay, boy, they could be exceeding people's expectations significantly. And they're not overly priced at present, I don't think. So I think it's a really, really good one for people to investigate.
Looking on SharePad, it's on a forecast PE of 9.6.
Yep.
Falling 2 years out to 8.5. The bit that really whets my appetite at the moment is forecast dividend yield 4.7, rising to 5.3. You know, those are
There you go, Pete. So if you were thinking of a, you know, you can have Tesco's if you want, or you could have a smaller, less behemoth or smaller company per se in Kitwave and get a bit more capital gains and also get the yield. But these smaller companies, the problem you've got is that you know that if there's a hit on Tesco's, it might be 3, 4, or 5% because somebody goes, oh, that weren't expecting that.
Yeah.
If Kitwave comes up and suddenly goes from slightly ahead to sorry, we've missed this quarterly target, the market will be incendiary and smash it to pieces. So, you know, you've got to be careful.
It's an interesting chart as well, because if you look over 3 months, it's been in a sideways range between about, say, 142, 143, up to 155. It looks to me like it might break out at 155. If it does break out, then, you know, when you're on a PE of 9 or 10, this could easily be on a PE of 14, which would be 40% upside from here. So I think it all looks quite attractive on that one, I must say. It's, at the moment, you don't see a lot that you think, oh, yeah, that looks like it could be quite good.
Yeah, because ordinarily, once you see something that's got a, well, use the word chunky yield, people go, there's a reason why the yield's that high.
Yeah. Yeah,
be cautious, but that isn't really that high in a sense of excessive. You know, you said earlier about, you know, 11% on one of the miners. You know, is that, can they maintain that? I don't know. But yeah, so that's not too bad. If I was to give you some advice, which I never try and do, Pete, I would split the monies and end up with number 15 and number 16 and have half of it in Tesco, half of it in Kitway. That would be a compromise, but I know you don't want too many stocks to
That's
follow.
That's a good idea, but I sort of originally wanted 12 stocks in my income portfolio.
Oh, you're already higher then. Okay.
But I've sort of stretched that to 15. I don't really want to go over, but I mean, it's a fair point you make. And I guess...
And one of them might drift out. You might go, actually, I don't want that one anymore. And then there's room for Kitwave as well. So who knows?
Yeah.
Marcus will help your decision, no doubt, over the next 3 months, mate.
Yeah, I could always buy Kitwave in my normal portfolio if I wanted to.
Absolutely.
But, you know.
Pete, I want to mention this because we don't tend to talk about it, but given the fact that, of what I was talking about with Mark Dampier on the Investing Matters podcast, I just thought it would be nice to reference this particular situation. It goes back to Russia-related matters again. We don't talk about them often enough, and I think we might need to talk about them a bit more going forward. Funds, investment trusts, and so on and so forth. We'll talk about them a bit more going forward. But the Jupiter, as it has closed its emerging European opportunities fund due to issues arising from the war in the Ukraine, right? It's not going to be the first. It's not going to be the last. I just wanted people to just bear in mind and have a look at their exposure regarding the funds. I know lots of people got funds. It's a nice way to have the pooled sort of look on the world and assets and sectors and so on and so forth. But have a look at some of your funds and have a look at their exposure. And hopefully you haven't got any funds in your portfolio that got over exposure to Russia, to the Ukraine conflict and so on and so on and so forth. Because this particular fund getting closed could be the beginnings of other emerging related funds or any funds related to Russia and the Ukraine being closed or being heavily hit in share price, or unit price, should I say. So have a look at those. I just wanted to give people a heads up on that because they may not be aware of that.
I think adding to that, I actually noticed, because you know, you'll hear me, I sing the praises of Investors Chronicle a lot and I really like it. But one thing they mentioned as a great idea in the latest episode, the latest magazine, was I think it was Utilico Emerging Markets or something like that. And I just thought that is not something I'd get excited about at the moment. I think when you have a mood in general that is more towards risk off than risk on, yeah, I hate the term. When you get that, it tends to be smaller cap stocks get hit, as opposed to the bigger dividend paying solid FTSE 100 kind of boring stuff. It's the smaller stocks that get hit, and that's what we're finding, they're drifting and whatever. But it's also emerging markets. Emerging markets is something that when the mood is risk on, they do really well. When the mood is risk off, it's not the time to be in them. So I'm not criticizing Investors Chronicle, you know, far be it from me to do that. But great magazine. But, you know, that's one where I just thought, you know, I'm not sure I'd go along with that one. But, hey, you know, I get a lot of things wrong. So, you know.
We all get a lot of things wrong, mate. I want to mention before we go, because I'm conscious of we've run over again, Pete. One stock, you can quickly look this up as well. It's the digital learning company, Learning Technologies Group, ticker symbol LTG. So that came out. You're on your list. Okay. So that came out with some news. That was a positive update, really. Full year results. Apologies. And they were ahead of expectations, Pete. Revenues were up 8%, and adjusted earnings before interest and taxes increased by 36%. And interestingly enough, although it's only a tiny sort of dividend, that dividend was up significantly as well, 40% to 0.7 pence. So it was only minuscule before. But the fact they're paying a dividend, very, very interesting indeed. So that's another one I think should be looked at, considered, given the fact that, you know, more and more people are doing studies online, digitally, and et cetera, and choosing not to travel to various universities around the world. That could be an option for them to look at and research. Ticker symbol LTG. That's my last one for the night.
Yeah, do you know, that's an interesting one. Do you know the CEO, Jonathan Satchell?
He's my neighbour.
Get off.
No, he's not.
You bloody had me then. I honestly thought he was your neighbour. Oh, my Lord, I can't believe I'm so gullible.
Wanted to see you chuckle, mate. Just wanted to see you chuckle.
God, that is a classic. Yeah. Okay, so you don't know him, yeah?
No, I don't know him.
No, do you know what? I don't know him either. He's not my neighbour. He doesn't live round the corner. But what I will say about him is that I've read updates from LTG over many years, and I've been a little bit suspicious of the acquisition strategy because they've been very much acquiring. But actually, they've done a flipping good job. And when you think they got through that miserable COVID period and have come out in pretty good shape, that guy, Jonathan Satchell, your neighbour, he must be pretty good. He must be pretty good. So, you know, that impresses me. Mate, can I mention another one?
Quickly, this is the last one, then we're going to go.
We're going to go American, mate.
Go for it.
We're going stateside. Right, Intel. INTC, with the old dollar sign in front. I haven't looked at it since I wrote this on a bit of paper, so it's probably about a week or two out of date. Even a month out of date. When I wrote it down on my bit of paper, it was on a forward PE of 12. And a forward dividend yield of 3.1%. Now, you know, Intel, chip maker, arguably a bit old fashioned with the chips it makes. But, you know, chips are definitely a place you want to be in technology. It's at 3-year lows, looking at the chart. Look at that. You can just about see it, maybe. 3-year lows.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Might be an interesting, again, interesting one to investigate. I'm not saying anyone should buy it. I'm not saying anyone should sell it. But it might be one to look at, you know, if you're into American stocks and whatever.
Yeah. So market cap, 184 billion. PE ratio, 7.4, if this is correct from what I'm getting. And dividend yield, again, 3.24 from what I'm getting off my little computer screen here.
So you're talking about historic PE as opposed to forward.
So that's not too bad. I think the game changer in town you need to look at, if you're thinking about Intel, is have a look, and I've not got the stats in front of me here, is do a comparison regarding growth rates, return on revenue, margins. That, so Intel versus Nvidia, dollar sign NVDA. Those are the two that I'd be looking at. And then I would select from one of those if I wanted a chip maker. But we'll probably try and look into NVIDIA and discuss NVIDIA on another podcast. Okay, Pete, are we done?
Yeah, mate, we better go because I'm starting to feel the pain. I'm feeling the burn.
Okie dokie. All right then, folks. That was Twin Peaks Investing podcast number 74. We have Weedy Dealy back. Yeah, and he's been on one. You've heard so many things about bowel movements today. I'm not sure where we were going, guys.
Oh, man.
that 5 minute talk about the poor girl with, anyway, this is what you've been missing, people. He's back.
I hope she's not listening.
So there we go. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, and we will have a guest with us, hopefully. I've tried to organize one of our female investors to come on the show and ordain us with their presence and their skills and their knowledge. So hopefully that will happen. That will be on the 18th. We'll record the next podcast, all being well. And Pete's even more repaired from his operations and in better health. So until then, we will say thank you, take care, and God bless you all.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.